Hello, my name's Michael Loveday, and Katie Schultz has kindly invited me to talk to you today about my story, The Second Shed. I'm sorry I don't have a video recording for you. I couldn't master the technology well enough to manage that, but I'm hoping this audio recording will offer some use in its place. I'm recording this in the city of Bath in the United Kingdom, or the not-so-United Kingdom, as it's been known by some more recently. And the story I'm talking about and sharing with you today is called The Second Shed, and it was published in a quirky online magazine called Cease Cows in November 2016. And I'm going to talk to you about the story for about 5 minutes, explaining why and how I wrote it, what I was trying to do when writing it, and then finish by reading the story out. So this story is taken from my novella in Flash, Three Men on the Edge, which was published in the summer of 2018. And there are three sequences of linked flashes in that book, one for each of the three main characters, of whom Denham, the main character in The Second Shed, is one. And what can I tell you about Denham? He is an older man. He has five different types of telephone line for different types of phone call. His wife, Joan, is a huge fan of Neil Diamond, and Denham makes major life decisions based on the lyrics of Neil Diamond songs. He's also obsessed with superglue, and makes detailed annotations on the receipts of his glue purchases. And most importantly for the story The Second Shed, Denham is making a miniature model of his hometown, Rickmansworth, inside his second shed. And Denham is kind of a composite of some people that I know with a hefty dose of exaggeration, and a little bit of me thrown in to kind of glue it all together, which is how I often develop my characters. But one particular direct source for this piece is my father, because he has four sheds in his garden, which I always found a bit over-enthusiastic. And so that was where the original trigger for writing about a second shed came from. And I realized after I wrote this piece, another source in my subconscious was the brilliant film Beetlejuice by Tim Burton, which, gosh, that must have been over 30 years ago that was filmed now. It's a kind of fantasy comedy film, one of my favourites, and it features a miniature model of the town where the characters live very significantly in the story. So that was in my mind visually as I was writing this piece, The Second Shed. So what was I trying to explore in this story? So one thing was definitely fastidiousness and obsession, how they are both positive and negative, and how they relate to the creative mindset. As writers, we have to almost be obsessives in terms of how we edit and try and perfect our stories and make them publishable, and go over and over, you know, a few words in a sentence sometimes just to get them right. And Denham certainly is tipping towards signs of obsessive compulsive disorder in the novella, and manifesting anxieties about his inability to control his life. And the miniature model is one place in his life where he can apply some sort of apparent control. And I wanted to kind of explore this parallel with writing in a way that this feeling of or illusion of control is something that we can experience as writers too, as we work towards finishing our stories and poems. We're trying to get things under control, or we think we are, and the reality is we're not really, we're not fully in control of what we're doing. There are always things that are happening in our stories and poems that we don't understand or that we're not aware of, and I think that's a really interesting aspect of creativity. Another thing is that there is a kind of common craving in life, I think, among us for privacy, some territory or practice of our own that's entirely unshared with other people. And the miniature model in his second shed is certainly something of that kind for Denham. I think also with this story, I was experimenting with flash fiction as a kind of character study rather than being a plot-driven or event-driven story. I'm not really aiming in this story to deliver actions with significant consequences or any kind of event-oriented snowball effect that you often get in other kinds of story. I really wanted to make the piece almost meandering. I think it's a hard piece to read out because of that, but I definitely wanted to explore a flash fiction where the sentences are wandering around in a way that it's mimicking the mind of Denham himself. Each of the three characters' stories in Three Men on the Edge play with punctuation, structure and style. So in Denham's case, I use, as I say, lots of meandering, lots of brackets, commas. When I started them, I was originally thinking of them as narrative prose poems in which each third person style mimics the character's personality in some way or evokes some qualities to do with that character. So there's definitely in this piece an excess of detail. There's a famous David Gaffney article in the UK's Guardian newspaper from a few years back, which you can still find online, I think, in which he advises writing flash fiction from the perspective of writing long and then going short. I think at the time he was writing stories of 2,000 or 3,000 words and editing them down to just 150 word stories, which is what his first couple of flash fiction collections consist of. I think that's a really interesting way of approaching writing flash fiction, but also I think it's interesting to do the opposite, to write short and go long sometimes with by exploring and a kind of excess of vivid detail, especially if it suits the character situation. We don't always have to write our flashes in the same pared down style. I kept editing this piece right up until its eventual publication in the novella. So the final book version has a new beginning, a different ending, and some footnotes too, which add to the feeling of obsession that Denham expresses in this story. But today I'm going to read to you the original published version in Deceased Cows in November 2016, because I think it would be a bit confusing to read the very final version. So thanks for listening, and this is The Second Shed. Without the wife knowing, Denham is building a miniature model of Rickmansworth in his second garden shed. He is gluing the model together entirely from matchsticks, and because of the matchsticks, it is taking a long time. He filches odd half hours at weekends and grabs time in early evenings when Joan is distracted by the consolations of Judge Judy. He is trying to do it on the sly, but he must be patient and painstaking. His pockets rattle with matchboxes as he trudges through town early on a Sunday morning, surveying the terrain, smuggling in his overcoat sleeves the foldable plastic rulers with which his father left him. The model is faithful. St. Mary's Church, Watersmeet Theatre, the Pennsylvanian, the Conservative Club, right down to the detail, for example, of buxom Jane's sun lounger in her garden next door. Yet heights and distances can only be approximated in most instances. He is no mathematician, and he is aware that ladders would be conspicuous in public. The church spire, for example, he suspects he has exaggerated by the equivalent of several feet. And of course a map is mere cousin of the territory. Eventually, he is intending to populate the model with miniature representations of its inhabitants, but he needs the nuts and bolts of its architecture bedded down beforehand, and the damn thing keeps shifting. Shops and offices change names, new buildings repeatedly materialise. Denham can't yet decide if working on this model constitutes more art than science. He is troubled by the large proportion of guesswork involved in it. He has confided in Phil about this project, at great risk, Denham would argue, and Phil has given the model a provisional title, Rickmansworth, an ideal town. Denham stands within the dark of four wooden walls, studying the replica, illuminated only by the pink light from a lava lamp. He sinks into his thoughts like he's floating in the Dead Sea. For a few minutes, he's alone, contemplating his life's masterpiece, and nobody can find him.